Bonk.
Dan.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing all right. Keeping busy.
Ah.
Doing the thing. Doing the, you know, working, doing side work.
It feels like every day kind of feels the same, doesn't it?
Oh, wow. You're immediately going into the segue there. Oh, geez.
I was just going to say, quarantine is the perfect time for this movie. I mean, because everyone's days are kind of melding together.
It is. The movie you're referring to is Palm Springs, which came out on Hulu earlier this month. And yeah, I don't think they could have foreseen how good of a time it'd be, especially if I want to say Hulu bought the rights after Sundance in January. So this was not one of those movies that was like, oh, it was going to come to theaters, like King of Staten Island. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, it's like, well, shit, we just got to release it digitally. I think it was always planned to be streaming, and they could not have foreseen how apropos this would be.
Well, wait a second. Before we get into it, can I tell my anecdote from this morning?
Please, yes.
So I was walking down the street, as I do, and I had my Bluetooth headphones on, and I was listening to the Easy Allies podcast. And I was walking, you know, walking about. And I noticed that I have Bluetooth headphones, and I noticed that the audio is starting to get choppy, and that, like, never happens. And I know I had enough battery juice and everything, so I was like, oh, gosh. And I look in my I feel around my pockets, and my phone's not there. And
but your headphones are on, and you're hearing a podcast.
My headphones are on. I was hearing, like, the podcast was really choppy. So I backtrack, and I get to the point where the music or the podcast is getting clearer and clearer, and I know that the phone has to be around there somewhere.
It's totally like I'm playing Ghost of Tsushima right now, and when I'm near an artifact, my controller vibrates, mm-hmm. and it does the, like, getting warmer type
thing. Yeah, it's like a radar.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm listening to Daniel Bloodworth talking about something and trying to find my phone, and I can't see it anywhere. And I know it has to be around there because the sound is crystal clear. The Bluetooth would be choppy if it wasn't near there. But I was looking everywhere and I couldn't see it. And then eventually I ran home to get you to help me look too. And we were both looking around, like looking under like those big traffic cones, those big orange ones.
Well, and the place that you said it was strongest was right above this like sewer grate.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking down like, did it fall in the sewer? Like, would it still be good if it was in that water?
Because I was thinking too, when I crossed the street, because I like where the audio was loudest was like where I happened to be crossing the street, where I happened to have crossed the street. And as I was walking past one of those traffic cones, my like shirt or something got caught like in the like yellow do not cross tape thing. So I kind of like had to flip around, like twist around to undo myself as I was walking. And I thought maybe that's what did it. Maybe my phone got, because my shorts were kind of loose and my phone was just hanging out in there. But yeah, so I thought it had to be around there. And we looked and we looked and we looked and we couldn't find it. And, you know, my phone had my credit card and ID and, you know, insurance card, all this important stuff. And yeah, I thought it was totally screwed until you uttered those wonderful words. There it is. And
yeah,
it was in the middle of the road, and this is a busy street.
Yeah, one of the main roads here, and it was right there, and probably dozens and dozens of cars had passed while we were looking for it.
Right.
Somehow it was perfectly in a spot between lanes, and nobody had changed lanes or anything, and everything was A-okay.
Yeah, and the phone, like, it blended right in with the asphalt, because it had a black case on mm-hmm. it, so it was, yeah. But that was a whole thing. I was really worried.
It was kind of since it ended well, it was kind of a fun little hunt.
Yeah, you know? It was.
Yeah. Here's my dumb thing that mm-hmm. happened today. I was going to go to the gym, and I was leaving our apartment, and I remembered as I walked down the hallway, mm-hmm. I got about 20 feet away from the door, mm-hmm. our apartment door, and I remembered, oh, shit, Bonk asked me to take this cardboard down to the trash room mm-hmm. when I went down to the gym. And so I heard a door open behind me right when I had that thought. And I thought for sure it was going to be you holding a cardboard box looking at me, being like, hey, remember, take this out. And so I turned around very theatrically and dramatically and did this giant point. So I'm like turning and I'm reaching my arms out like, woo, like pointing when I did the 180. And it was just like a maintenance guy staring at me. And I'm just pointing at him after doing this like flourish turn. I'm just like, I'm sorry. I thought you were, you're not my wife. Sorry. She was going to give me something. That's why I was pointing. It was very, very awkward. So.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's, you know, big quarantine days here between us losing phones and accidentally pointing at people.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's not particularly eventful when you're home all the time. But you know, occasionally something slightly out of the norm will happen and it sticks in your mind. And oh yeah, the other thing was it probably 2 days ago or something. I woke up, we were both laying in bed and I woke myself up laughing.
Yes, like cackling, cracking up laughing.
Yeah,
yes.
And it was one of those rare times where you laugh in your dream and you laugh so hard that you end up laughing in real life and it wakes you up.
And I had been awake and so I was just like laying in bed and all of a sudden you, who had been dead silent for a long time, just started
sleeping.
Cackling. Yes, it was very odd from my angle.
Yeah.
Quarantine times. You know, we're probably one of the lucky lockdown podcasts that does not have to deal with, you know, I've had to do plenty of Zoom podcasts not involving painting the stream, but we get to do it locally.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how we've always done it, because it turns out we're married and we live together, and we sit here in the fazone in this closet, and we record painting the stream.
Yeah, this is like a safe zone from the pandemic.
It's just me and you in here.
Yeah, no amount of illness will keep us from recording the podcast in here.
We've never missed an episode.
Not one.
We haven't even ever done a remote one. Every single one of these 122 episodes has been me and you in the same room. We've had a couple times when I've traveled for work and we've watched the things separately. Like, remember when I was at Giant Bomb and it was like, you know, 2 weeks in San Francisco or whatever. It's like, okay, I guess I'll watch all of the Ballad of Buster Scruggs or something.
Well, remember,
you know,
that one time we did that fun thing where we watched that, like, I think it's called like Explained on Netflix, where every episode is like a short little episode on a different subject and we watched different ones.
Stock Market
separately.
And Cricket. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we had to explain to each other like what it was about.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. But this time, no, we just watch a straightforward film, the aforementioned Palm Springs.
Well, it's actually not straightforward at all because it keeps looping back around.
That is true, but it is a traditional motion picture released on the Hulu. Director is Max Barbacoa. I was not familiar. I'm
sure he's never heard that joke.
Grade A beef here. I was about to say grade A joke, but then I went back to the meat thing. Did it get better or is it just bad?
Why are you talking about meat?
Beef barbacoa?
Oh, right.
Wait, what did you think I was doing?
No, that's what it was. But I forgot, like, that it was meat. Like, I know it's like a thing.
You knew
Chipotle.
It was a word?
I know it was like a thing at Chipotle, but then it's like, all right, it's meat.
I think it only exists at Chipotle. I don't think they have the copyright for it, but I think barbacoa only exists within the walls of Chipotle. I've never heard of it anywhere
else. That'd be such a weird thing for them to make up.
Or maybe it's barbecue in a different language? You think? Barba? It can't be a coincidence. Barba? I guess there's Barbasol, and that's shaving cream. Getting to the bottom of things.
What about Barbie?
Barbie, but that's, I'm saying B-A-R-B-E. Is Barbasol A? We're asking
Barba.
The big question. We're just asking questions here on Painting the Stream. So
we're not even the big questions, just questions.
Yeah, we're not saying any value propositions. Like, we're not saying they're good questions or answerable. So yes, director Max Barbecue did this. I had never heard of him before.
Don't make fun of his name.
Barbacow.
Okay.
Made this film. I was not too familiar with him, but it was produced by the Lonely Island Classics label that they have.
I believe this was his directorial debut.
Oh, okay. But yes, the Lonely Island Classics, who also produced MacGruber. That was directed by Jorma. I assumed it was one of the Lonely Island fellas that directed this, but it was not. They were just on the production end here. But Sandberg himself is the star, Mr. Andy Sandberg.
And Kristen
Milioti?
Yeah.
I had never seen her before.
Yes,
you mentioned she's been in a lot of stuff. Wait, I've seen her in that Black Mirror episode.
Yes.
Right? Okay, I think that's all I've seen her in.
She's also just like turns up, like pops up in different things.
She was excellent in this. She was awesome.
I think she's in Fargo.
Oh, okay. The show?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Not the movie from... Yeah. Andy Samberg here. A little bit of range. He is pretty much always just the total doofus.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen a lot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I almost said 999. It's just 2 9s, right? Brooklyn
yes.
99. You've seen a lot of it.
I've seen it all, yes.
Is he pretty much just traditional Andy Samberg in that?
I would say so.
Okay. Every single time I've been in the room when you've been watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine and I see like 5 minutes of it, it makes me laugh out loud numerous times.
Yeah, there's a lot of like a lot of little jokes about Wario that are just like jokes made in passing.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's I've seen a grand total maybe of 15 minutes of that show from like 12 different episodes, like a minute each or something.
Yeah.
And I, for some reason, I've heard like three different ones of him like playing the Switch and being like, Wario, why are you like this? I love that he hates Wario. That's great. Which, by the way, did you see the big news today about Wario and Waluigi?
I saw that tweet, and it seemed, if you like read it, it seemed like it was written by a child. I think it was like Nintendo Power. I assume this was like maybe the early 90s or something, or whenever
this
Wario
would have been
the
99
Waluigi debuted. Okay.
Yeah.
But it was a time where who could have anticipated that the lore of these characters would be taken so seriously?
But,
and he probably got an assignment like, I'll just write a little anecdote about Waluigi, what his origins are. It doesn't matter. Write whatever. And then this guy, whoever this writer is, I assume it's a guy. Maybe it was a girl. I don't know. Had free reign to just construct a critical part of Waluigi's yeah. past. He probably didn't even know he was doing
it. Well, you are 100% right, I'm sure. But with Waluigi's backstory being such a mystery to all of his fans, such as myself,
right.
You got to take whatever you can get. And this is from a Nintendo publication.
Well, in that case, I mean,
his name is Jimmy Papadopoulos.
I know, that's so absurd. Like, it's in a way, I kind of really like that it's that way because, like, of course it would be this ridiculous. And, like,
yeah.
implying that, like, him and Wario have, like, a sexual relationship
yeah.
is an interesting and, twist that I didn't expect.
No, and Yoshi's throwing house parties and mocked Wario for not having a friend.
Yeah, Mario kind of sounds like an asshole in this scenario. It's a real, like, MacGruber scenario where he ends up being the ultimate asshole, like when he's telling what's his name about like how his relationship with Von Kunth went down.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's like, yeah, to this day I have no idea why he hates me.
Yeah.
It's just like it shows his backstory and he explains it and
it's like
oh
asshole, yeah.
I completely see why he hates you. This is terrible. Ryan Philippe is immediately like, wait, are you the bad guy? Yes. Sorry, Waluigi. Breaking Waluigi news.
I just assumed they were brothers, Waluigi and Mario.
I always call them the Wa brothers, not knowing if they were officially blood relatives, but they were obviously very close, mm-hmm. and so I always refer to them as the Wa brothers. But it's much more complicated than that. He was an actor for hire named Jimmy Papadopoulos, and Yoshi laughed at him at his house parties because Wario didn't have a friend to bring, so Wario paid an actor for hire from, like, Craigslist.
It's an escort service.
Yeah, a guy named Jimmy Papadopoulos to change his name legally to Waluigi and start looking like him and acting like him. It's amazing. I love this backstory. It fits.
I mean, like, if this is true, that means that Waluigi is like the greatest actor ever.
Oh, he keeps it kayfabe.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really
Can
does.
You imagine like when he's at home alone, like just acting like a real person, like brushing his teeth and like looking at himself in the mirror and just like nodding his head no and just
No, I think he lives the gimmick.
Waking up groggy and making coffee and frowning.
No, he lives the gimmick. He is that man now.
Really?
There is no more Jimmy, only Waluigi.
All right.
Yes. I love it. I love the backstory. That's,
yeah, that's
to me, that's
great.
Canon now.
I'm really curious if the person who wrote that would react to that.
Yes. Being discovered like 20 years later. Palm Springs. It is a time loop film.
Yes, in the vein of Russian Doll.
Mm-hmm.
Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day. Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You, which we saw.
Yes. Happy Death Day to You sucked.
It did. Edge of Tomorrow, which is awesome. Yeah, I think Groundhog Day, you know, everyone just kind of refers to, I think, the genre as like Groundhog Day, you know, it's like a Groundhog Day situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like even like in a lot of these movies, they refer to Groundhog Day because it's just so iconic. Like that's the one, you know?
Right. Yeah. That I feel like that was the first of these types of movies, maybe.
The first like super notable successful one that I can think of for sure. It's a great concept.
Yeah.
But obviously when you do one of these, it's obviously going to be just compared to Groundhog Day, which is, you know, a classic.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know anything going into this movie. I didn't know about the Groundhog Day aspect of it. I thought it was just like straight up rom-com. And I was totally on board for that because I like rom-coms. I like Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti. I feel like I've never said her name out loud before.
I read it as Milioti.
Milioti. They're great. And,
yeah.
You know, I was down to watch this, and I was very surprised when it took a sci-fi turn.
That's cool, yeah, because that's the only thing I did know about this. I read, you know, Andy Samberg, produced by Lonely Island, time loop movie, and I was like, you know what? And it was getting really good reviews. I was like, I think I want to watch this. This sounds up my alley. I don't need to read anything else. But I did know about the time loop thing going in. One thing that's different is Niles, Andy Samberg, is already in the loop. Like, he's well into the loop when we first meet him. One of the early scenes is it's set around this wedding in, like, Arizona, New Mexico, it seems, Nevada. It's like
Palm Springs?
Oh, I guess it would probably be Palm Springs. I guess, I guess I could have surmised that. So yeah, early on, we see him, you know, dancing around at the party, and like he basically does this speech. He interrupts the maid of honor.
Yeah,
speech.
He has like, you know, something's up with him, because the first scene of the movie, like, he's having sex with his girlfriend and he can't like finish, and you know, it's really weird between them. And then he has this ridiculously amazing speech at the wedding, and then he's trying to like seduce Sarah, Kristen Milioti's character. And does it with this like perfectly timed dance where he knows where everyone's about to step at the right time.
The drunk guy's going to fall here. And then he, yeah.
It was just impossible, impossible stuff. So that was interesting. And then I really, really liked the part where, because at this point, like, I didn't know it was a time loop movie. I was just suspicious of what was going on. And then when they're like making out by a rock or something like that, and then Roy comes out in like clad in all black with a bow and arrow.
To clarify, Roy is J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons.
Who is, yeah, the J. Jonah Jameson guy in Spider-Man. Yeah.
He just starts shooting at Niles and
like
trying
a crossbow.
Yeah, and like is like hunting him. And Chris, they were just like making out, him and Niles and Sarah. So I can only imagine like Sarah like just starts screaming, like, what the fuck is going on? All of a sudden this guy comes out of nowhere and starts shooting him with a bow and arrow.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons has this like flashing like headlamp on, he's dressed in all black, and it's just gotta be the most like, you're drunk and making out, to go from like that mindset to like, what the fuck is I think she is just screaming like, what the fuck, at one point.
Yeah,
like, over
and
over.
Like, obviously he is, you know, in pain, but he's not like shocked by what's going on, which is another wrench in it. And then she kind of ends up going to the cave, the same cave that was like the catalyst for Niles's time loop, which, by the way, I thought it was interesting. The writer of the movie said that like it doesn't really matter too much in the movie, but supposedly Niles was in this time loop for like 40 years at this point.
Oh, okay. So
like
that's
the equivalent of 40 years.
And at this point, he has just totally accepted that, like, this is what it is. I'm not trying to get out. I'm not, like, happy. I'm not sad. I'm just kind of like, just, this is what I do now,
right.
You know? Whereas we learn that Roy, J.K. Simmons, had a night, one of the millions of nights that Niles has had at this wedding. Roy met Niles, and it basically they wound up becoming good friends. They're doing coke in a bathtub together. They're just partying and everything. And he finds the cave, Roy does, and he goes in, and Niles is just kind of too out of it and drunk to like, he's like, oh, wait, stop. And so Roy gets stuck in this, and that's why Roy is continuously hunting Andy Samberg for sport.
Yeah, but you don't know that until like a little bit later, where like, so Sarah goes into the cave and then wakes up and realizes that it's the same day and is really fucking mad, like runs after Niles in the pool and is like, what the fuck did you do to me? And she obviously is completely preoccupied with the fact that she's in a time loop. Naturally, it's very new to her, and it's absolutely ridiculous. You can't wrap your mind around it. And she spends the whole day trying to figure that out. And then the very end, when the day's winding down, she's at that bar with Niles. She's like, oh, yeah, why was that guy hunting you?
Like, totally forgotten about
this.
Yeah,
and I honestly forgot about it, too. And I was like, oh, yeah, what the fuck was with that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we learned that, yeah, he's also in the time loop.
Yeah, and there's a real pace to all this. Like, you are kind of consistently learning stuff about the day and the interrelationships between interpersonal relationships between everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Some things we learn is that Niles has known forever that Misty, his girlfriend, is cheating on him with the wedding officiant, or at least that night was cheating on him. By the way, the Misty character, I think that actress who plays it does a really good job of just playing that very just kind of like vain airhead,
yeah.
Like just like this day is about her too, even though it's not her wedding.
Oh yeah, a detail from the beginning that I don't want to forget involving Misty was like the very first scene in the movie, Niles, they're in bed and like she's getting ready and she puts her leg up on the bed and he's like, that's a good leg. And then she's like, all right, we can have sex. And then they do it. And I, looking back on it, it's obvious like he's done this for so long that he's been able to deduce like what the fewest amount of words he has to say to get laid is
yeah.
to her.
Immediately upon waking up, just say, that's a good leg. And that's all it takes. Yes. We also learn the groom, Abe, is cheating on Sarah, the bride, cheating on Sarah's sister. Is the bride.
Yeah.
And he's cheating on her with Sarah.
Well, we don't learn that until way later.
Right. I'm just saying some things that we, like, learn about the day.
Okay.
You know, because there's so many, like, time loops and stuff that it's kind of hard to, like, go sequentially. So I just kind of took my notes as, like, here's the stuff we learn throughout.
Yeah.
Unless you want to go more in order.
Well, I feel like at the end, like, she sees it as an opportunity to, like, get better. Because it's, like, when that comes to light and she realizes, like, oh, this is... you know, I have an opportunity to break this loop and, you know, change myself for the better. That's like part of it. But yeah, so they both kind of like, what, that's what's so interesting about this version of this Groundhog Day thing is that, you know, there are multiple characters that are going through the same thing in this movie. And it's really helpful that Niles has been there for so long because he can kind of explain to Sarah the rules of this world and like, okay, you, this is the best way to kill yourself. Like, I've tried this, that doesn't work. I've tried this, this doesn't work. Like, and eventually she kind of gets to a point where she accepts the situation and they're just like, let's just waste some time together. And then there's this amazing montage of them just doing super fun shit involving this. One of the highlights for me was this super elaborate dance routine that they end up performing in like a super tough biker bar.
And they walk in wearing like weird greaser, like, you know, like denim shirts and like these like handkerchiefs around their neck and stuff.
It's really
funny. They just cause this big scene, do this big, like, kind of like West Side Story type thing. Yeah, that part's great. I think that's always a fun part of these movies in this genre is the, like, fuck it montage where it's...
I love that, too.
They do it in Groundhog Day where it's just, like, you know, he's killing himself in a million silly ways and he's just kind of, like, having fun with it. It's past that, like, shock point of, like, what's happening? Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, let's see what I can get away with here.
Yeah, and I think if that happened to anyone, like... I mean, obviously, it's an extremely unlikely scenario, but, you know, that's that you would get to the point after being shocked to just be like, all right, I'm going to take advantage of this situation before inevitably getting to the point where it's like, okay, I have to figure out how the fuck to get out of here, which is what happened in this movie. But yeah, they there's some really funny moments there.
Yeah, they're just kind of like taking it easy. They're kind of saying that they don't want to get romantically entangled because they were just worried that's going to, like, they're the only two people that are living that. So let's not. Right. But like, in terms of, like, you know, it could be a relationship. So they just don't want to, like, entangle that since they have to basically... They're, in a way, the only people that are going to be around each other for the rest of eternity. Mm-hmm. But they're, like, hanging out at... there's this pool where this family's on vacation. And so they use the pool. That's a place where they always just kind of waste some days away. And then there's a scene where they do mushrooms in the desert. And I believe that's the first time they have sex, right?
Right.
And before that... they see dinosaurs and they see this like a line of like brachiosauruses going over the horizon and, you know, they're tripping and they're like, is this real? And it's like, I don't know. It's real now. Or, you know, like they say something like, who cares? You know, it's amazing. Look at this. Which weirdly enough kind of does come back at the end. But yeah, we, at one point here, Roy, we get to see him at home because he lives in Irvine, California.
Right. Well, oh, wait, let's not jump there first. Sure. I just want to say, like, okay, so they get it on and then, you know, they were so reluctant to, like, move the relationship to the next level because they, I'm sure part of them was they both felt like they weren't that those type of, like, relationship type of people. So naturally, after they do that, like, the next day, it's, like, super weird between them and Sarah's being, like, really weird and... you know, she's like, oh, I can't believe I slept with you and this and that. And then Niles says, like, you know, the reality is, and he lied about this before, is that, like, they had slept together thousands of times before. And he told her that he never slept with her before. So, yeah. So then she resolves to actually try to get out of the time loop. And she jumps in front of a truck and dies. And then she kind of disappears. Like, Niles can't find her anywhere. It's not clear what's going on.
Yeah, like, she knows the rules enough at this point that she knows that if she, right when she wakes up in Abe, the groom's room, she can just kind of get the fuck out of there before, you know, like, Sandberg wakes up. And so, like, he really has no chance of, as long as she just, like, hits the road in the morning, he can never find her.
Right.
So there's a stretch kind of like of the maybe 3/4 mark of this movie where it's just, like, every day of him just being like, what the hell? I had this thing, and then I ruined it, and now I just can't find her,
And that's when he goes to Roy, to find Roy at his house in, like, Irvine, California or whatever.
Yeah, and I like the idea that Roy hunts him, but it's just, like, every once in a while, like, because it's, like, a drive. It's, like, a several-hour drive from Irvine to Palm Springs. And so it's just, like, when he feels like it, he drives down there and hunts him for sport. But
I think he would be there anyway, because the time loop is he's a guest at the wedding.
But doesn't he start the day in Palm Springs and he drives down? Because they said something early on about, like, oh, yeah, most of the time. Like, he's here every once in a while, but he has to drive all the way here every day.
Oh, so he starts the day at his house.
Yeah, so, like, most days he stays in Irvine because it's like, oh, it's the perfect day. He's married and has kids, which surprises
Niles. Yeah, that's what he says to Niles. It's like he's done hunting Niles because he realizes, like, you know, it's actually a pretty decent situation because it's a perfect day where his children are little and his wife is at the peak of womanhood or something,
right.
And his son is, like, watering shit, like dog shit.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's a perfect day, but it's also imperfect because he's never going to get to see his kids grow up or anything. But, like, you know, he's this period is going to be like immortalized forever for him. Mm-hmm. So he kind of likes that. And I can respect that.
Yeah, I think for a while, at least early on in Roy's time in the loop, I think he was so pissed off about it that he was like going down there pretty frequently and hunting mm-hmm. Niles. But it's just like at a certain point, he's like, I'm just not going to make the drive. Things mm-hmm. are fine up here. I'm not getting anywhere.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And so, yes, Sarah is actually spending this time learning quantum physics. And, you know, I guess in a world where you have infinite time,
right,
it's conceivable that, like, even something that's as complex and, like, you'd have to almost be, like, a genius to understand it. Well, she's got infinite time.
Right.
She's taken a million courses. She, like, takes a laptop to, like, a diner and just, like, does a ton of like webinars and video calls with professors.
And... Yeah, and the professors at a certain point are like, you don't really need our help anymore. And she's able to come up with this theory that like if she makes the cave explode at the perfect time, then it'll knock them out of this, you know.
Like a box, they said.
This like... universe they're in. Yeah, this time loop thing.
Yeah, there's like a 3-second thing between like the portal sucking you in and you waking up. Mm-hmm. And like that's when you have to detonate the thing.
Yeah.
Basically.
So this like I know like a lot of these movies don't really try to explain what is going on. But this one does. They explain it in a scientific way. And she says it's essentially like the multiverse theory. Like mm-hmm. they get caught in this one loop and every loop is creating a new timeline and they just have to bust out of the one they're currently in.
Yeah. And I appreciate the way it did it because like considering we just watched and covered for the podcast Devs, which is a show that deals in similar ideas of like quantum theory and all that stuff, but in a very kind of lengthy, slow, heavy-handed-ish way. It's just a very grim show.
It's much more philosophical.
It is. And this one, it's like, it deals in those themes. But like, when I think of this movie, I think of like a fun romantic comedy with like this time loop twist, you know?
I mean, that was such a huge part of Devs. That was like the whole movie.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, it's actually Deus. And, you know, this is the whole basis of that software. But like, this was kind of just like, we'll figure it out at the end, you know, how they're going to get out of there. But it wasn't like a huge part of it.
I think I just like, though, that like, after watching like 8 hours of like the slow explanation of all that stuff, it'd just be like, well, here's a montage of her at a laptop, and then all of a sudden, let's get out of here. I just liked how like brief it was,
right.
You know, because again, that's not what the movie is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she does a test with a goat where she straps it with C4, sends it into the thing, and then the next day on the loop, there's no goat there. So
right.
It escaped the loop and basically convinces Niles to do it with her. Let's blow each other up inside this loop here in the cave, and it works.
Yeah.
That's it.
They get out, and then you find them, like, you meet them again at that pool, and the people that own the house there finally come home, and he's like, oh, I guess they come home on this day. But one of my favorite parts is when he's telling Sarah that he actually has a dog, and she's like, you never mentioned that, and he's just like, oh, it's just one of those shaggy dogs.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I like the part, too, where she asked, like, what was your job before this, before mm-hmm. the time loop at one point, and he's like, I don't remember. And mm-hmm. she's like, that's crazy. It's like, that short little exchange really illustrates, like, how long he's been in there, that, mm-hmm. like, he had a job and he doesn't remember what it was.
Right.
It's been so long now, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
It's a smart movie. It's just smartly paced. It's
so well paced.
Yeah, they make great use of the concept.
It's a short movie, too. It's 90 minutes, mm-hmm. but it's so well done, and it fits so much in there.
Yeah, it doesn't waste time. It is a rom-com that is in no way cheesy. Mm-hmm. You know, it just...
They're really likable.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as a couple, like, they are extremely likable. Mm-hmm. They work together great. J.K. Simmons is, like, really funny comic... I guess it's comedy, so it's not comic relief, but his character is hilarious.
Yeah.
Which he actually shows up again in a mid-credit scene, which we didn't see the first time around.
Right.
I feel like the mid and post-credit scene are, like, a big Marvel thing. Mm. And so, since we're not Marvel fans, I don't think... We usually just, like, once we see it directed by... We were just like, all right, that's it.
Yeah.
But you found out today when we were getting ready for the podcast, there was one. And it's basically Roy starting to talk to Niles at the wedding. And Niles is like, who are you?
Yeah.
And it's Roy realizing like, oh, God, he got out. You know, he got out of the
loop. Sarah's plan worked. And he's like, happy for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So and that's kind of an interesting question of like, would he pursue it, you know, like, or does he live in that perfect day forever in Irvine? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, I think if he wanted to pursue it, he probably would have went back because he got a message from Sarah. So he probably would have went back then. But like,
yeah. So the last shot of the movie proper is they're in the pool. They're getting kicked out by the family and it kind of pans up and you see the Brachiosauruses walking across the desert again. And my thought then was that like it was real. And the dinosaurs were real, and when they were on mushrooms, something that, you know, the mushrooms let them kind of peer into a different, like, parallel universe where, like, dinosaurs never went extinct. And so, and then when they blew themselves up at the end, that they had kind of blown themselves into that parallel universe.
I like that idea.
I do, too.
I feel like it's kind of open to interpretation, but I like that idea.
I do, too. I read, well, the director just straight up said what it was in an interview, and it's not, like, I like my idea better.
Oh.
The director said that, like, he was just trying to make a metaphor about how... the two lead characters always said that, like, love couldn't exist for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then he actually said in the quote, dinosaurs don't exist, which I accidentally said it like that on a live stream once. And everybody's like, Dan, no. Like, remember?
Well, didn't you say dinosaurs aren't real? Dinosaurs don't exist. Like, they don't. Okay. It's true. Well, then I guess. They are real. They were real.
For some reason, I thought my exact words were dinosaurs don't exist. But you're right. I did say dinosaurs aren't real. In context, it made sense what I was saying.
No, it didn't make sense in context.
No, I was talking about...
They are real.
I know dinosaurs are real. That's what's so funny about it. Like, for the record, anyone who's listening to this podcast and doesn't know the clip I'm referring to, it made it sound like, out of context, I was saying that dinosaurs were never real. That is not the case. I know dinosaurs are real.
It's not out of context, though. Like, you said that.
But, okay...
And you, like, believed it in that moment.
No. That's not true at all. That's remotely true.
You're definitely acting like someone who's not getting defensive.
Hang on, wait. Do you think I thought dinosaurs weren't real?
Well, in that moment, you thought, like, because they're not real now, they weren't real.
I just phrased it weirdly.
Okay, well, all right.
Wait, for the record, we got to make sure. You know that at no point have I doubted that dinosaurs existed, right?
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Okay, but in the moment, I was talking about suspending disbelief while playing a game or watching movies and stuff, and I was like, oh, well, dinosaurs aren't real, but I watched Jurassic Park, and I can get lost in that. But then, like, immediately, like, the people that were on the live stream with me started reacting like, whoa, Dan, no. And I was like, oh, wait, I see what happened here. It makes it sound like I was saying that dinosaurs never existed. No, I know dinosaurs are real. Dinosaurs are real. So, for the record, dinosaurs are real.
Right, you heard it here first, everyone.
Yes. But anyway, it's a long walk for the director said that dinosaurs don't exist, just like they thought love couldn't exist for them. But hey, here they are. He just thought it was like a fun metaphor thing. I like my idea.
Yeah, I like yours too.
Yeah, I thought it was all right. Yeah, I'm trying to think of any other thoughts or anything we missed on this.
It was a great movie. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. I mean, we obviously spoiled a lot here, so maybe...
Yeah. But it's still fun to watch,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Well, another little thing, though, real quick, before we get off it, is I liked the part where... there's a part where Roy, J.K. Simmons, is dressed up like a cop, and Kristen Milioti, like, runs him over and, like, breaks his legs, and he has to spend the night in the hospital and stuff like that. And she just kind of thinks, like, well, whatever, we're all going to reset the next day anyway. Mm-hmm. But then when you hear Niles and Roy talk about pain, it's like, well... Right, they reset and they're fine, but like that pain and the memory and like this horrible night in the hospital and everything, like that was very real for them. And so it's like, it's not this like throwaway thing to just like hit someone with a car in this universe, because it's like, no, they're going to go through that and they're going to have like trauma from that. Like, they won't feel the physical pain, they'll be able to walk fine, but like that sucked.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I also remember that part was like, that was the night after they got it on.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me wondered if it was like, kind of like Groundhog Day, where on Groundhog's
Groundhog Day.
Hog Day. When he, like, ended up being a selfless guy who, like, you know, had been with Andy McDowell and, like, was finally acting like a good person, that's when, like, the chain broke finally.
Yeah.
So I wondered if, like, they finally found love and now that's what got them out of this loop. Because if you remember, they were kind of, like, suspicious about the day. Like, they went out and to see what would happen, and they were driving, and, like, when they got stopped by the police officer, he wasn't sure if this was, you know, legit or not. So that's why he was being, like, weary of how she was acting.
Right, right.
But then when they realized it was Roy, it was like, oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, because they're all trying to figure it out because Kristen Milioti at one point thought it was, like, a karmic thing. And that's mm-hmm. why she tells her sister at the altar that, you know, she was cheating on with her husband. Yeah, just... one of the best ones. I would put this, you know, I liked Russian Doll. I would definitely put this above Russian Doll.
Yeah, Russian Doll was like, the first episode was really interesting, I remember, but it kind of lost me.
Yeah, I remember generally enjoying it. I really don't remember what the tenor of our podcast about it was, but I think we were really into it at first, and by the end, we didn't like dislike it, but I remember not being as into it at the end as I was at the beginning.
Yeah, that's accurate, I think. It's probably hard to make a show out of this premise, but a movie lends itself, you know, much better to that kind of thing.
Yeah. And this is just a really excellent example in this genre.
Yes.
Yes. So, real quick. By the way, seasons change. It is no longer the summer Swayze, as you can tell. There is nary a Swayze to be seen in Palm Springs. Really enjoyed that.
That was fun.
We already have plans to watch Palm Springs. Point Break again.
Yes.
By the ocean itself.
That's right.
That should be nice. Before we go, we've got a Hugh question here.
Do we?
Yes. Do you want to hear a Hugh question?
I do.
All right. I think I know the answer for this. Do you think you have the right personality for sales?
Oh, my God. No. Why would you ask a more interesting question?
No, you don't want that one?
I'm afraid to call
people on the phone. I know the answer, but people don't know.
No, I'm afraid to call people on the phone. I can't deal with that. I hate being inconvenient to people. Like, the idea of me annoying someone, you know, drives me insane. Yeah. Like, I just want to be not seen or heard or I just want to disappear. I don't want anyone to see or hear me. I would not be a salesperson. I'm so not aggressive. I'd be so bad at it. I'd be like, hi, are you interested in buying some grains? No? Okay.
Grains?
Well, whatever.
Why is that the first thing your head went to?
It's anything.
Grain salesman. Bonk.
Grains.
You would have hated the job I had in college where we had to call alumni and ask for donations for the school.
Especially because that's something like they already gave the school much money.
You'd get put on pools of School of Social Welfare students who are 10 years after graduating still paying off their student loans or whatever. And they would just literally laugh at you when you asked. And you always had to start at $1,000. The Dean's Club. Would you like to join the Dean's Club with a donation of $1,000? Oh, man. Yeah, I hated that. I got around it by I think I have to be earnest. There are two ways I could do sales, I think. One is if I truly, truly believe in a thing and I feel like I can be like, hey, man, this is awesome. You should go. You know, I went to this amusement park and it was awesome. Check it out. Like, you know, I would be fine.
You're in amusement park sales?
I don't know why I went straight to that. It was something like Casey Joe's. Casey Joe's Barbecue. They've never given me a cent in my life.
Meat sales. That seems far more likely.
Yes, the old meat sales. But no, I've gone on podcasts. I've been like, no, seriously, go to Casey Joe's website, order it. If you don't live in Kansas City, if you live near Kansas City, you already know about it.
Yeah. I mean, if you happen to be selling one of the greatest versions of a thing, it's probably easy. Yeah.
Yeah. So either I have to be able to be completely honest about like, hey, I totally endorse this thing, or I have to be able to be unbelievably obviously like shilly sarcastic about something.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm trying to think if like, let's say, I don't know, what's a product that like I don't feel strongly about, but I don't hate. How about those pickles? If Vlasic pickles, which I had some pickles on stream this weekend. It's funny. I didn't like the taste of them at all by themselves, but I actually had them on the Popeye's chicken sandwich this weekend and they were a lot better on the sandwich. Let's say Vlasic. Wanted to
Vlasic.
I don't really know how to say it. If they said, hey, we'll sponsor your stream I don't think they would since I ate three of their pickles and just grimaced the whole time. But like, let's say Vlasic said, hey, we'll give you a bunch of money to advertise this on your stream or put a panel below your stream. As long as I could go on camera and go into like obvious like shill, you know, host and go, hey, everyone, check out Vlasic pickles. They're the best pickles. You know, like I feel like I could be very obviously in shill mode and I'd feel okay about that.
Yeah, but it'd be another thing if you're like calling someone an individual and you don't have an audience.
That is true. That is true.
Like
a cold call?
Yeah, like I had to cold call for my previous job and it was like supporting this crazy, ridiculous idea that I thought was so insane. And I had to, like, try to convince people to give meetings to my bosses. And, like, it never, ever worked out. And I would not be persistent at all because I fucking hated doing it. I would just, like, try my luck with emails. But, yeah.
That yeah. Was... It's a weird, scuzzy feeling. Yeah, you know, some people take to it really well. I guess the KU job was pretty much the only time I really had to do, like, straight up sales like that. And
but you were the best at it. Like,
you know what? I was the best at it. Actually, I kind of had to do it at Best Buy, because Best Buy, I worked in the digital camera department in, like, 2003. And they were all about, like, okay, well, you know, it's all about this one stat. It was like P something something, where it's like how many accessories you sell with the camera. Because, like, you could sell 20 cameras in a day, but if you didn't, like, upsell people on, like, oh, get the bag and get this SD card and get this lens and everything, then it was like, well, you didn't do jack shit. And honestly, I was probably the worst salesman at Best Buy, because there were so many guys there that were like, they would literally take people out to the parking lot and try to sell them, like, energy drinks from their trunk as, like, a side gig. You know, like, there were people that were just like, hey, I'm a salesman, just trust, like, the real kind of slimy fake salesman thing. I was terrible, because, like, I would have families come in and I'd always ask them, like, hey, so what do you want the camera for? And they'd be like, oh, just some pictures around the house. I want to take pictures of the kids while they're young. And I was like, okay, anything crazy, like, you know, action shots, or are they old now? Are they doing, like, soccer or anything? Or are you going to be doing any kind of, like, this, blowing stuff up to, like, posters or anything like that? And if they said no, I'd be like, honestly, this one's way cheaper than this one. They would be looking and asking about the super expensive one. And I would tell them, like, don't waste money on that. Just go down to this one. And, like, that is super not what your bosses want you to do when you're trying to sell stuff. But, like, I just wouldn't feel good about myself telling people to spend an extra $300 on something they don't need.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you're too honest.
Oh, well, thank
you. Well, you're not too honest. You're perfectly honest.
Thank you. All right. Well, let's thank... Something we can be completely honest about is thanking our patrons.
That's right, folks.
Yes, on patreon.com, the folks at home. Thank you so much for your support. We keep it very, very simple here at Painting the Stream. It's a $5 a month supporter level. And what that gets you is it gets you the ad-free podcast each and every week. It gets you episodes a day early. You will get those episodes on Saturday instead of Sunday. You will get access to our Discord. We've got a shared Discord between Rikert's Painting the Stream. Market. It's called Rikert's Market. Got my Twitch subscribers and Painting the Stream supporters in there. Very active, growing, awesome community. It's just...
They're great.
Can't put them over enough. They're excellent. But also, most importantly and most personally, you will get your own custom... Bonku.
That's right, Daniel.
Bonk, do we have one this week?
We sure do.
What do we got?
We got a Bonku for good old Michael.
Michael?
Michael.
Okay, I hope you enjoy this, Michael. Yeah, I have not heard this.
You know, close your eyes, get comfy, light a candle. This is for you.
Do you think he's really doing that? Or do you think he's just, like, driving or he's at the gym?
He's probably just farting.
Okay, Michael, well, cut that out and listen to your Bonku.
I came home that night and found the house was empty. Michael left a note.
There's always a mystery. There's always a mystery. I always want to know more. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Bonk, for that excellent Bonku. Reminder, we're coming up near the end of July. Actually, yeah, this will probably be the last chance. If you happen to be listening to this podcast when it goes up, and it is the month of July in 2020, The window is closing on the Podcast Awards nominations. So if you go to podcastawards.com, Painting the Stream is up in two categories. We're up in the TV and film category, and I believe it's called the Adam Curry People's Voice Awards.
Mm.
So when you go to nominate stuff, you'll see all the different categories, and there's a drop-down list. So if you go to that People's Voice Awards and TV and film, if you could just click that for Painting the Stream on each one and save your nominations. I think it makes you do an email address. You can do a temp email if you want to. I think it's like tempemail.org. Just Google temp email if you've never done one before.
Think about it, people. A series of clicks is all you got to do.
A minute or two of your day if you enjoy this podcast. That's all we ask. So, if you could do that, this is probably your last chance. And we'll see if we get bumped up to that, like, final nominee section there. I would love to...
That would be neat.
I would like to accept an award if you bump.
As would I.
We'll see. It's a long shot, but, you know, I think we do a good job here.
We have fun.
Well, everyone, we've done the Hugh Game, we've done the Patrons, we've done the Podcast Awards. We thank Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thanks, brother.
We check out at PanTheStream on Twitter and give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. I like how I just said we don't ask a lot from you, and then I just listed, like, 9 things to do. But thank you all very much for listening, and we will be back next week.
Bye-bye.